Would you argue that the GTR is reliable?
A full bolt-on GTR will last you forever. Before I started racing, I ended up putting 100,000 miles on the car. I never had a problem. Even all the way into my racing, I could look back at my Ekitech log on the car. I did over like 100 launches on that stock transmission and I had barely any problems.
Welcome to the Eat Sleep Race podcast. We have a very special guest today. We have Brooke Barini, who is a drag racer. She drives a pink R35 GTR. Brooke, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's a nice way to wrap up an awesome weekend.
Yeah, so we just wrapped up FL2K. We're currently in Bradenton Motorsports Park. Shout out to Victor for letting us use the space to record the podcast in. Really appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit about who you are to, you know, get the listeners in on who Brooke Barini is. So who are you? What's your background? How did you get into racing? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I'm Brooke Barini. So I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts. I live in the DC area now. Getting into racing. So when I was a kid in high school, the R35 GTR just came out and I was like, oh my God, that's like the coolest car ever. I totally want one. So that was like my dream. And then after high school, I joined the Army. And I met all these people who are into like performance racing. And, I was a watercraft engineer. So I worked on diesel engines and started learning about performance. And I was like, man, you know, I want to apply this to my dream of getting the GTR. So after the Army, I bought the GTR and it wasn't a gorgeous one. You know, it was something cheap. It needed some work. But I had some awesome friends who helped me learn. And you know, this race community is awesome. So the first time I, you know, brought the car out to a racetrack, I was immediately hooked.
How old were you when you bought the GTR?
I was 22 when I bought the GTR.
And so you were living in Boston at the time when you bought it, or you were already in Virginia?
I was already in Virginia at that time. I bought it down in North Carolina. I actually traded in my Evo, which was like really hard for me because I loved my Evo. I had Evo 10.
Let's backtrack. You had an Evo?
Yes.
You had an Evo before this? Was that your first car?
It was. All right. Let me rewind a little bit.
You need to rewind a little bit because that's...
So when I was in high school, my first car was a Miata. I loved that. I know. They're the best. I miss that thing to this day. I loved that car. It was the first thing I ever did was like go on the forums and like learn all about it. Like I did all the silly stuff I could do while I was a teenager.
Yeah.
I painted it pink. That's where the pink thing started. And I drove it all through high school. I drove it all through the Army. And then in like the last year I was in the Army, one of my good friends, Sean, he had this beautiful Evo 10 named Nessa. You might know it. It's a pretty famous Evo. Man, that car was just gorgeous. And he taught me so much. I believe he was a Blackhawk mechanic or instructor. And he was just so knowledgeable with engines and cars and like putting stuff together. And I learned a lot from him. And that inspired me to buy the Evo. I felt like that was like a good in between, you know, my dream car of the GTR and then the Miata that I had.
Right.
So I bought the Evo. I had some fun with it. I fell in love with boosted cars. That was my first, you know, turbo car ever. And I was like really attached to it. I did a ton of fun stuff with it. I didn't paint it pink, but like I put so many like pink accents on it. I just love the cuteness,
what,
right?
What color was it?
It was white. It was white.
White with pink accents.
It was white. I had so much fun with it and I met so many cool people. But the time came and I had to sell it to get my dream car. So
did you race the Evo?
I did not. Oh man, no. That's like the worst car ever. I mean, let's be fair. Like the GTR is a bad car to race to begin with how expensive they are to fix. But at that time in my life, like, yeah, no, there was no way I was going to race the Evo.
Too scared of the expense behind it.
I guess I wasn't like really confident in like launching it without hurting it. You know what I mean? So
yeah. I understand that.
Yeah.
So like what piqued your interest in cars? Like how did you get into it? What made you want to buy a Miata and then, you know, have the dream of wanting to get a GTR?
So my dad had the Miata like way back, maybe when I was like 12 or 13. He just had it for like a fun car to drive around the summer. It was super cheap. And I like just became addicted to that car. I was like, this is so cute. Like it's the cutest car ever. Like maybe the Suzuki Cappuccino is cuter, but like, that's it.
But those are a lot harder to come by.
Right. So I loved that thing. And, you know, I had some friends who also like to work on trucks and stuff. And I just kind of fell into it. I just loved it. I loved driving it. That's what I learned how to drive in. It was my first manual. So from a very, very young age, I used to drive around. I had a farm up in Massachusetts. So I just drive around in the backfield in the Miata, learning how to drive. So yeah, it was so easy. The Miata is the Legos of the car world.
Those and Hondas are to start with, it's the perfect platform.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yes.
I think it's the perfect platform.
You could just learn so easy, and if you mess something up, it's not so hard to fix it.
Or expensive.
Right.
For those that are watching, I have a Miata, and I did full brakes and tires for less than $500.
See, that makes me want to scream. I mean, this weekend alone, I had to put two new slicks on the back of the GTR. It was over $650. It's just one little small inconvenience for the GTR is multiple thousands of dollars.
Right.
So it's a whole different world. I love the Miata, so that was amazing. Yeah.
All right. So talking to the GTR now, so you sold the Evo, you got the GTR.
Yeah.
When did you start racing it? Because, I mean, you didn't want to race the Evo because it was expensive to fix. Why pull the trigger on racing the GTR? It's even more expensive to fix the GTR.
I know. So it's kind of, when you know the GTR community, you kind of understand this. So when I bought the car, I just wanted to do everything with it. So I bought the car, it had 25,000 miles on it. Before I started racing, I ended up putting 100,000 miles on the car. I used to do these street rallies where you'd go from, one side of the country to the other and stop at destinations, stuff like that. It was really fun. I went to Poconos. I did some circuit track racing. I really tried it all. I loved doing all of that.
Nice.
Because I didn't buy the car to just look at it. I wanted this car for so many years that I wanted to do everything with it. So that's what I did. And funny enough, my last stop really on my adventure of trying stuff out was Florida 2K 2018. I was here at Bradenton Motorsports Park and I tried drag racing it for the first time. And I was hooked. I was so hooked. All of my friends that had GTRs were already here and racing and they know what they were doing. I had no idea. I came here, I entered the 1050 index class and I ended up taking runner up in class. And I was man, this is such a rush. It was so fun. And I'm I got to keep doing this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what was done to the car at that point that you were doing all of these things? Did you modify it? Was it stock?
It was basically full bolt on. We did a couple transmission upgrades, not really clutches and baskets, stuff like that, that commonly broke. I don't even think we had axles. It was stock trans, basically stock trans, unopened motor. But we ran, I think we ran 10.3, and by the way, I live in the D.C. area. I drove the GTR from the D.C. area to Bradenton Motorsports Park in Florida, raced all weekend, and then I drove all the way back to D.C. within the same couple days and without any problems at all. It was so much fun.
So would you argue that the GTR is reliable?
I'm gonna say this. A full bolt-on GTR will last you forever. I really don't think that you could beat on it hard enough. And this is coming from me with experience with this. I drove this thing around the country. I never had a problem. Even all the way into my racing, I think I didn't break something until I think I broke axles. And then at that time I was maybe we'll do a trans upgrade now. But truly, I had, I could look back at my Ecutech log in the car. I did over 100 launches on that stock transmission and I had barely any problems.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when do you start breaking into now you're having issues with it? At what point in modifying it or going full on race car do you start dealing with issues and what are some of those issues?
So I think, axles are a big thing. If they break, that can mess up the transmission. I've seen people do FP Green turbos on the GTR running on a stock motor and they're fine in a stock transmission. Maybe they have to do clutches and baskets again. I think it's once you start putting bigger turbos on the car or, that's really when you're going to break into somewhere where you're going to need to upgrade the transmission. You might start breaking things more. Something bigger than like the FP greens, like maybe something bigger than like a stock cover turbo.
Yeah.
That's when you're really going to start needing it.
So quick mod list, full car, front to back. What do you have done to it?
Oh, man. Okay. So we've had a couple changes over the years. So currently, as it sits right now, it is a 4-1. We have the Precision 5875s on it. We just put those on last year. I actually was just texting John Shepard earlier, and he was like, wow, like 7.8, that's like a 1K, the Shep 1K like record.
Mm-hmm.
Like no one's gone that fast on just a 1K. So that's what we have, the Shep 1K in it for a transmission.
Okay.
I mean, we're on Cyvex. I know a lot of GTR people don't like Cyvex, but it's been working great for us. So that's pretty much it. We took a little bit of weight out of it. Not too much. Everyone says it's a gutted race car, but it's really not.
Still have the radio in it.
Yep, we have the radio. We have AC. We have yeah. I mean, like
that what was it? I think Global Time Attack. In Global Time Attack, you need to have radio for to be in the street class. So still technically street car.
Yeah.
So well, so what's the class that it runs in?
So there are a couple different classes, and you know the DCT. I guess race classes are a little difficult right now. So before all of these V10s started coming in and going super fast, it was mostly just the GTRs, and the V10s were just starting to come in. And the rules were modified to allow the V10s in as everyone was doing R&D on them, right?
Okay.
So the V10s used to be running maybe like eights. So like they would be in with the lowest class of GTRs. To try and give them an advantage to try to keep up with us. And the GTR has always been restricted. So we have like a weight limit. We have a fuel cap. Like you can't use any methanol. And then, you know, these V10s started getting faster. And now you have to modify the rules of the racing a little bit. So
for the GTRs to keep up.
Well, right. So what they started doing is they let the V10s get faster and stay in the same class as the GTRs. But the GTRs are still being restricted by weight, fuel, tire size.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and the V10s have no restrictions. Like, all they have to have, like, stock brakes and 18s. But you can put huge turbos on them. And so it doesn't really make sense, right? But people like Victor are changing that game for us, where he had the DCT versus all-wheel drive class. Not only is it cool because you get to race other cars,
mm-hmm.
but the way he broke it up into three different classes really put everyone in a good place. So you're not racing Marcelo Duran going 7-2 and whoever just bought a twin turbo R8 who, you know, is just getting into racing running maybe like high eights.
Yeah.
They don't have to be in the same class anymore.
Right.
So the way that Victor set that up was just awesome.
So tell me, like, what are some of your accolades? Like, what are some achievements that you've gotten over the years in your time racing?
So when I first started working with AMS, my goal was to see what little changes we could make to like get some of these micro records. I really liked working on the car, and AMS was awesome enough to like let me work on the car with them. I was in their shop a bunch and we wrenched on it together. So our first thing was we wanted to take this car and just turn it into like a powerhouse, but keep the stock turbos on, which was crazy. So it was a 4.3 and we were running on I think M1 at that time for fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a blast. I mean, that car spooled ridiculous. So we actually ended up setting the stock turbo record for the GTR quickest and fastest at, I think it was 8.72, and I forget the mile per hour. But that also became like the quickest stock turbo car at all, which is pretty cool. Well, like not a lot of people know that.
Was that your goal going into it? Or
so I think.
So you set out for it?
When we first went into it, like we wanted to like see how we could maximize like these little achievements to just keep growing together.
Right.
After that, we did the stock cover turbos. We had the Nismo GTR turbos that we put a different inducer in, and that was fun too. I mean, that car was super fast with that. I think we went 8.0 on those turbos, which is like crazy. Like it's silly fast. So
yeah.
Yeah, now in the 58 mils, you know, it would be nice to get the record. I think the record's somewhere like 7.3, but we'll see how that goes.
How far off are you from that?
you know, after this weekend, I think we could probably get there. Yeah. That last pass that I made, I let up and we ran at 780. So,
and you said the goal is 7.3?
Yeah. But I mean, letting up at a 780, like I let off at the 1,000 foot, there could be potential. You know, we're still running ethanol, so we're not, you know, on any methanol or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something we could do.
Are you going to set that to be your next goal or?
I don't know.
If it happens, cool. If not.
I think that's the point that we're at. Setting records has been a lot of fun. It's been awesome working with AMS as a team. I think like my next goal is to get in more races. Like I don't want to just keep doing 2-3 races a year. Like I would love to get like 6 or 8 races a year and keep being competitive.
Is that how? That's how little you're racing? Just 2 or 3 times a year?
Sometimes. So some of these races, like it's really hard to keep the car going. You know, you get Texas 2K, Florida 2K, GTR World Cup or DCT World Cup. And sometimes that's it. I mean, and the more that you build your car, the more it's going to break, the more expensive it gets. Yeah. So you start doing more and more races, the more chance you're going to break.
Do you have a team behind you?
I do. Yeah. AMS Performance. They've been awesome. Prime Cuts has been working with us. Jordan Martin, DriveWire, he's been working with us as well. So,
well, what about when you're like actually at the track? I mean, like a pit crew. You have a pit crew?
So, and that's like the only place where it's kind of hard for me to do more racing on my own. Mm-hmm. So AMS will go out and do the Texas 2K. They'll do DCT World Cup, stuff like that. But for instance, like they weren't able to make it to Florida 2K this year. So that's where my experience with racing before I was with AMS on my own kicks in, and all the people at the track here who are amazing. So like this weekend we had no one out here with us. The shop Houston went out of their way like completely and let us pit with them, so we weren't parked out in the mud or anything. Nice. So again, like this, the GTR community is insane. There's just so many awesome people.
That's good. So, like, if something does break, I mean, you know how to work on the car, right?
Right.
So.
And that was the goal. I've always wanted to know exactly what was going on with the car. Even when I first bought it, you know, I was in the shop with one of my good friends, Dave Baker, Baker Performance. He taught me, like, everything I know about the car. So, late nights wrenching in his shop, he taught me seriously everything. I know the car, like, inside and out. So, like, the back of my hand. So, now if something breaks, I know what went wrong. I can hear it, like I can feel it, and that was my goal because I want to be able to race more and more.
Do you feel like that's a necessity for a racer to know how their car works inside and out versus like, I don't know, I'm sure there are racers that just get in the car and only focus on the driving and, you know, they have the whole pit crew. Do you feel like a racer needs to understand the mechanics of the car in order to be a good racer?
Truly, to be competitive, I think it's a must. There are a lot of people who, you know, just throw money into a car, give it to a shop, have it built. They don't even test it. And they go to the track and try to race. And then they get mad if they don't win. Like, that's not how racing is, man. Like, you got to know when to make adjustments. You got to feel it out. You have to know what you need to adjust. You need to know the density altitude. You need to know what tire pressure you need. You need to know how much boost off the line you're going to build. Those are really important things that I think everyone needs to know about before going down the track. You get down the track and you're squirrely. Are you going to let out? Are you in the group? Are you out of the group? Like, you need to know all of these things, I believe, before you go out there in something above 1,000 horsepower.
What are some things that you've noticed while you're racing or on the track or pulling up to the line or in the burnout box where you've been like, something's off with the car?
So a lot of times for me, like, thankfully my tuner, he has a lot of good safeties in control, like in the car. So if something is truly wrong with the car, I can hear how it gets on launch control and I can tell if something's wrong. He has safeties in the car to where if something is so wrong, it won't even get into launch control. And I really, really like those features that he's built in because I never want to break anything. I rather, you know, pull it back out if it's a qualifier, fix it, come right back up. You know, I don't want to risk breaking it and then I can't race the rest of the weekend. Yeah. And I'll give you a good example of that. So
okay.
We're running like a special blend of fuel right now, and it requires my ethanol content to be above 60%. The way that I mix the fuel and the way that the fuel is mixed in the tank, when I put the fuel in the car, the ethanol content was actually at like 52%.
Okay.
And the first pass I made for qualifying, I only ran a, I think it was like an 8.6. So I went back to my tuner. I was like, hey, man, like, what's going on? Like, I thought the car, like, was at full power. He was like, it is. I wonder what could have happened. And, you know, I plugged the laptop in. He remoted in from where he was on a weekend, which is awesome. He's great.
Oh, he wasn't even at the track.
No. So Jake Compton, incredible tuner for AMS. He was actually like out at a car show. And he ran back to his truck. He brought his laptop. He hotspotted into his laptop. He punched it in. I, you know, connected to the internet. I got on to the internet and we went through TeamViewer. He looked at the logs and he was like, oh, well, that makes sense. You're at 52% ethanol content. You need to be above 60.
That's awesome.
I mean, that right there, like being able to do that, how would I have known without having some way to test?
Right.
You know what I mean? Having a team like that is just irreplaceable.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So not he wasn't even at the track and
no.
he's helping you out.
And he's in a different time zone too. So, you know, it's really cool to have someone who's like passionate with you, like looking into the car. And every single pass I made, there wasn't time where he didn't text me. He's like, hey, let me grab that log. Like, I want to see if we can change anything, you know?
Yeah. Here's a good question for you. What would you say for somebody that wanted to get into drag racing? Like, they've never been to the track before. They just wanted to try it out. Yeah, we'll start with that, and then I have a follow-up question
okay.
after that.
So my best advice, if you want to get into racing, go to the track and just spectate and walk around and ask questions. I don't believe there is anyone on the track that I have run into that would not answer a question that you had for them. I mean, that's how I've made most of my friends. You know, I came to Florida 2K for the first time, never raced before.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone who let me borrow their slicks so I could run down the track because, you know, I didn't want to make a pass on
street tires that you've been driving across the country.
And these were people that I had just met, you know, or I knew online, like vaguely, you know, and just the community is incredible. There's no one out there that's not going to tell you what they're doing or give you an update or give you advice. You just need to get to the track, ask the questions, and then you can start building from there.
Well, but like, who would you run up to? Like, just look for racers, look for techs, mechanics.
Yeah. I would look for the racers. They're usually out and loving to talk to people. I mean, that's half the fun of being a racer is like interacting with the people who are watching you.
Right.
This is a mutually beneficial thing, right? You know, there would be no spectators without racers. There'd be no racers without spectators, to be quite honest. You know, we couldn't afford what we do. We wouldn't have the track and the facility if it wasn't for the spectators. So get out there and ask questions. Really to anyone at a pit that you see working and wrenching. Obviously, if they're in the middle of tearing something down, like give them a minute. But truly, if you walk up to any of the pits, like someone will be there and they will help you.
From the racer perspective, do you find yourself like always easily accessible like to your fans? Do you have fans run up to you? Has there ever been a time where you're like, like you're trying to figure out the tuning and like someone's trying to come up and talk to you? So maybe you can't talk right now. Like what's that experience typically like at the track?
You know, I'm going to have to grab this from my backpack. I'm going to show you the coolest thing you've ever seen. I have some fans that have been following me since, you know, the first time I started racing at this track. And they come back here every single year to say hello. I always try to make time. But if I'm in the middle of something, it is so easy to just be like, hey, guys, I need like 5 minutes. Can you come back in 5 minutes? No one ever cares. That's totally fine. But I try to make the most time I can to interact with everyone here. That is like the most important part to me. And the most important part is like the little girls that come up and they're like, my dad races, but you know, I'm like a girl and I don't know if I can do it. And then they see this bright pink car and they just come running up and they feel so comfortable. That is one of the best parts of racing to me is like seeing those little girls light up and get excited. And if you can grab my backpack and just open up the back, let me show you something that Hugo actually put together. Hugo O'Brien put together. Eat Sleep Race made this cartoon of my car, but they black and whited it out, right? So that it was just the outline. And they made me these printable coloring pages. And I've been bringing these coloring pages along with crayons to all my races. All of the kids that come up to the car, they grab one or two crayons or three, and then they color the car and they bring it back to me. And I have all of them in the car and I race with them every time.
That is awesome.
I love it. Like these kids are just incredible. And you have no idea how much that makes their day. you have no idea how much of an impression you're making on them that will last. And they really have no idea how much I love it. Like it is such a big part of racing for me now. Like I could not imagine not having these relationships I've built with these families. I watched them go from toddlers to now they're out there doing their own kind of racing as children, you know, or as teens. It's crazy seeing them grow up.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that was actually going to be my follow-up question on the previous one of, you know, what are your thoughts on women in drag racing? What's like the stigma behind it, if any? And, you know, have you ever gotten any negative feedback about it or positive feedback? Like, what's your experience and your thoughts on it?
So overall, these kids are our next generation of racers. This sport will not exist if we don't lift them up. It won't. We're going to get old. We're going to go away. We need to do everything that we can to teach these kids and get them into the sport, get them into the industry. That's super important. So that's one thing I always keep in the back of my mind whenever I'm on the track. As far as women, I think it's a little bit funny to me because people are always like, oh, it's a male-dominated sport. Like, how brave of you. I got to say, I have met some of the coolest women in this sport who are not afraid. I mean, yes, there are a lot of men in this sport, but no one is mean. No one is nasty to someone, a woman in a class. It's not like it's a sport like basketball or soccer or, you know, anything that's like physically differentiating between men and women.
Right.
You know, this is all about building a car and having the mindset when you go out there. It's not about a physical ability. I've never faced any type of adversity really with racing against men. A lot of them are like some of my best friends now, you know what I mean? And women in the industry, there's a ton of them. There's a ton of them. There were a ton of them out here this weekend even that were incredible. So, you know, I could name 10 off the top of my head right now that I hung out with this weekend. So
yeah,
there's definitely tons of women that you can look up to in this industry.
Is there anything you do mentally to prepare for a race or physically even, or anything you do to kind of like get your head in the game before actually going to the track or racing?
You know, it's really funny because a lot of people ask me like how I practice, and it's not as simple as, you know, some people who have a trans break. They can just do that app where they're practicing hitting the light at the right time. We don't have that in the DCT world. A lot of people don't know it, but when we are out there on the track, we run that sportsman tree for a reason. There is a 0.3 to 0.4 second delay in between me releasing my foot off the brake and the car moving. So there's really no way to replicate that to practice it in real life.
Okay.
You really just need to have seat time. And as far as like mental preparation, I love just turning on like a good song in the car and just like vibing out and like having all my friends around me. Like truly, I will just blast whatever my favorite song is like right before I get on the track, and I just get hyped up. It's craziness. It just gets me so in the zone.
I gotta ask you, what were you blasting this weekend?
Oh man, okay.
What did you? Is it like one song, or you have like a racing playlist?
There's a new song that Lotto just came out with. It's called Brokey, and I can't get it out of my head. And that was the song that was on my mind like the whole weekend, but. Usually it's just something pumped up. Like I love like Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion. I know that a lot of people don't like them, but like their music just gets me hype. So that's what I'd be listening to.
You just hear it bumping from the track. It's like, where's that coming from?
Oh yeah.
Brooke's just in the car.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Focus.
I don't care. I'll open the doors. Everyone can listen with me.
What's your scariest moment in drag racing? Have you ever had any like really close calls or any wrecks or anything that was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't do this anymore? Like it pushed you to that edge?
So I haven't personally in my car while racing had that moment, but I have been on the track watching some of my friends racing and crazy stuff happens, and that scares the hell out of me. Like truly, you know, there was one Texas 2K, Christine Dodworth. She was making a really nice fast pass against a competitor, and the competitor deployed their chute. The chute moved, his car moved, he hit the wall, and the chute went over and grabbed her car. And watching that from the line, I was so terrified because she's one of, you know, my closest friends. Seeing my friends almost get hurt was the most terrifying time for me. You know, anytime I see a wreck like that, like it just, anytime you see a wreck at the track, like, it makes you want to throw up, you know? Like, you don't ever, ever want anyone to get hurt. Even if you're, like, have, like, a some sort of rivalry with someone, it's never to the point of, oh, I hope they wreck their car, you know? Like, that kills me. Seeing people crash really destroys me on the inside, especially my friends.
So you've never had anything personally happen to you?
So there's one time that my husband, he will never forget this. It was actually at Hail Mary Derby. We were making our record passes for the stock turbo record. And that was when we were on methanol, I believe. And I made it down to the end of the track. And I noticed that I lost power in the end. And, like, you know, you see some of these cars smoking and you're like, why didn't they stop? Well, sometimes as a driver, you don't see it because you're focused on what's ahead of you.
Right.
So I made a pass. I noticed it was a little bit slower. And then I was going through the traps and all of a sudden I saw these fire trucks coming at me. And I was like, what is this idiot doing? He's pulling right at me. I'm going like 170 miles an hour. Like, get out of the way. So I swerved out of the way and he swerved at me. And I was like, what is this guy doing? Like, I'm trying to, like, avoid hitting this fire truck. And as soon as I got slowed down enough, I saw this big whoosh of smoke come around me. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm on fire. Like, I'm on fire. So I popped out of the car. You know, I unstrapped, like, rolled out. And all the smoke was just billowing. And we had ended up, I think we lifted a head gasket or something like that. And that was pretty scary. I know my husband, he ran from... he ran from the end of the track and MIR, by the way, you have a long shutdown at MIR.
Yeah.
So I was all the way at the end. This man ran. It had to be like 3/4 of a mile all the way down the track. He sprinted to make sure I was okay at the end.
Did the scoreboards go off when he ran?
yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, he was on the outside, but like truly, like I wasn't scared at the moment because I didn't know what was going on. Kind of more of like a shock thing. Like I just jumped out of the car. Car's on fire. You know, he's like, the fire guy was like, open the hood so we could spray it down. I was like, why would I open the hood? If it's on fire, I'm going to introduce more oxygen to it. He's like, just listen to me. I was like, all right, whatever. So I like lifted it up and they sprayed it down. Everything was fine. It wasn't like catastrophic. But my husband sure was real scared. And I think that was one of the scariest moments that he's had. So personally, myself, I haven't had anything really sketchy happen. I think that we built the car, you know, with safety in mind. That's always our main priority. So. If I ever feel anything sketchy, I let out. You know, I'm not trying to be a superhero and run all over the track with my car. You know, I put safety first.
So, I mean, like, how did you not notice? Was it just like such small of a fire that you didn't see it?
Yeah.
And once you slow down, the smoke just kind of built
up?
Yes,
yeah. So, like, when I got to that speed to where everything behind you starts moving forward, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's when I saw the smoke, and that's when I was like, oh, my God, like something.
Okay.
Yeah. It all happened so fast, right? Like,
yeah. Any like crazy damage to the car? You said the head gasket went, so
yeah.
Obviously you had to replace the head gasket.
Yeah, I think we upgraded a couple things after that just to make sure, you know. What sucks is when your car catches on fire, they use this like powder to put out the fire.
And it gets everywhere.
Everywhere. I remember Peter, my main tech at AMS. He was telling me how he had to like take like a pressure washer and just like wash down the entire engine bay, like drop the motor and then like rinse out the engine bay because it was just everywhere. So after that, we just like went fine tooth comb through everything.
Why drag racing over other types of racing? And you said you actually tried other things.
Mm-hmm.
So like what made you choose drag racing versus like time attack or drifting, which to be fair, you really can't do in
an
all-wheel drive GTR.
Right.
But you know, what made you choose it?
The community, honestly. I just fell in love with all the people involved with the sport. They're all such incredible people. I'm sure there are great communities in drifting. There's great communities in time attack, all that stuff. But I found my people when I first started drag racing. And I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave. I can't walk away. I dream about coming back to a drag race after every race. You know, I never want it to be over because it's just the most fun thing in the world. So it really is the people. It's the people that make it for me.
Have you ever had, I don't know, any kind of rivalries at the track?
You know, it's funny to me because I've never had that in person, ever. I've always had supportive people in person. But there sure are a lot of people on the internet that love to talk, you know? But they'll never say it to your face.
That's the internet.
They'll never say it to your face. You know, I know people have talked behind my back. I've seen the screenshots. I've gotten the messages. You'll never say anything to my face. And you know what? I really, truly don't care if you can't just come say it to me. So, I mean, that's it. There's nothing to say to that, you know?
Was it bad? Was it like close friend talking behind
no,
back?
No,
or just like someone that doesn't even really know you?
Yeah, that's usually what it is. It's just people who are like, oh, well, like, what did she do to be sponsored by AMS? Like, what did she do to like get her car to this level? It's like, I worked my ass off. I paid for it. You know, like this is my sport that I have like put my entire life into. And people just can't handle that, I think. So they like to talk shit online, but
I was gonna say, how do you deal with like social media hate? Do you just like ignore it? Do you give into it? Do you respond funny stuff?
No, I really just ignore it, honestly. I don't even read it. I like all the videos that I've ever got hate on them, people would be like, did you see what so and so said on there? I don't care. He's not gonna say it to my face. So why do I care? No.
Out of all your time racing, what would you say is your most memorable race ever?
Just to only have one is so hard.
Okay. I'll give you two.
Okay. Give me two. All right. Obviously, setting the stock turbo record, I mean, that was so cool. I feel like we went so deep into that record. You would have to be crazy to try to take it from me. And I feel like that's something I'm going to have for a very long time. That was obviously a huge thing for me.
Were there any headaches in trying to do that?
Oh, like, tons.
On the day that it actually happened, like at the track, like were there any headaches that you were trying to deal with to get that record?
You know, we were just trying to like balance on like being safe, going faster. Are we going to break something? What are we going to do if we break something? It was just tough to gauge it. You know, at the end of the day, we walked away with the car in the trailer and it caught on fire, but you know, it was something very minimal. That was that race. Yeah. So it was the balance, but it was just so memorable that I would have done it over again. Like, it was just really cool to finally achieve something like that. So in a little bit of background, when I first started working with AMS, there was this manager at AMS, his name was Dan Macro, and he worked through the entire car build with me. We spent nights in the shop, super late nights in the shop. We, you know, did fab work together. We, you know, painted the roll cage together. Like, he put in so much time into this build, and he sadly passed away before we were able to like achieve that goal of the quickest, fastest stock turbo. So when we achieved that goal, it felt like it was a higher reasoning, like a higher purpose. Like, not only did we achieve that goal, but we did it for Dan when he passed, you know? So that really sticks with me. I'll never forget that moment, and I always will dedicate that to him. He was an incredible guy. Yeah. And then, you know, I got to say, one of my favorite passes probably ever was another Hail Mary Derby where I was up with Mac Brosnan. And that was like, I think our first and only ever pass that we've been able to make together side by side. And that was pretty cool to me. I have always looked up to Mac. He's a great guy. So that was really, really neat.
Yeah, Mac's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Although he thinks Connecticut pizza's better than New York pizza.
It is. Sorry.
Damn it, another one.
Yeah. It's 100% better. It's not even
a
question.
We got another one.
Yeah.
Damn.
I'm from up that way, so I know that Connecticut pizza is better.
Yeah. You don't drive down far enough into New York.
I drive through New York all the time. I've tried it. I've been on the One Bite app. I've tried all the ones I can up and down the Turnpike. I'm going to tell you right now, Connecticut's better pizza.
Turnpike? No. There is no good pizza on that Turnpike.
On and off. On and off.
You took some time off racing, right? Was there any particular reason why? Were you working on building the cars? Was it for personal reasons?
No, I mean, it wasn't even supposed to be really a break. We had an awesome opportunity to work with Precision Turbo. They provided us with our custom-made 5875 turbos in wastegates, and it just took a lot of fab work to get them into the car. You know, their R&D department working with AMS's R&D department, it just took a lot of time. And we were down for a little while because of that. It was unfortunate. You know, we there were hiccups here and there, but now we're back. We're strong. We're ready. And I'm looking forward to doing a lot more racing next year.
What are your future plans for racing? Like, is there anything you want to change about the car? Do you want to go for certain records? Do you want to race in a different class? What is the future looking like?
You know, I, especially after watching Florida 2K this year, I just had so much fun watching all the diversity of these different classes. Sometimes I get so blind to the DCT class because I'm just racing a bunch of, you know, GTRs and then the V10s. And I was thinking for a while, like, maybe I'm going to move to like a V10 platform. That's what everyone's doing. But at the same time, I'm not like a follower like that. Like, I'm not one to do the same thing as everyone else. So I've really been considering getting into a different platform. I'm not going to tell you what platform. Man. I'll leave that as a surprise. But I really have been thinking about it. I want to get out there and do more racing. As you know, it's really tough to race a GTR. They're very expensive. Yeah. And again, the higher up in the power you get, the more you're going to break. But I think we got something in the works.
Catch her in a sport front.
Yeah. I'm saying nothing.
Buys another Miata.
I would love to. That, you know, wouldn't that be cool?
That like, would be pretty cool.
Maybe like a VR38 Miata with a TH400.
Yeah. Or you could do a go-kart build, like kit car, like what Cletus did
that,
with his
that'd be cool.
Corvette.
That'd be cool.
Saw him ripping that thing this weekend. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, who knows? I'm not going to let you in on that one. You'll have to wait.
Do we have a time frame on that?
We don't. Roughly? We don't. We're going to continue racing the GTR next year, but I don't know.
I mean, you could do both.
All right, now, listen. I don't know how much money you think I have. It's not that much. It's expensive enough to race this thing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
What do you feel is a good competitor to the GTR platform? I mean, you're pretty loyal to it. You've been doing it for how many years now?
Six.
For 6 years now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in your time racing, I mean, I know you're often racing like V10s and stuff like that, but what's like a good competitor or alternative to the GTR platform?
If you lifted the restrictions off the GTR, they would be so much more competitive with the DCT or with the V10s. You know what I think would be really fun would be putting the GTRs, like maybe the 58 mil GTRs, up against some of these Hondas that I've seen out here this weekend. Specifically, I would love to get in the lanes with Joanna. We run very similar times. That car is so fun to watch going down the track. That would be one race I would love to set up.
Never know.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you could do that, though, no?
Yeah, absolutely.
What kind of class would that be called?
I don't know. I mean,
it would be like a...
That'd be like an exhibition kind of pass. Thing, yeah. You know what I mean? I don't. Obviously, there's not going to be a class for that. They're like completely different cars. But as far as like lining the cars up, I think that would be a blast.
Yeah.
I would love to do that. I love watching those Hondas go down the track. It's like really cool.
Damn, it's a shame you're not local. You guys could do like on a test and do.
I know, you know, like maybe me and Joanna, we'll figure it out.
Who do you think would take that?
I mean, I'm obviously, I'm going to bet on myself 100% of the time. I love Joanna. She's awesome. She actually, you know, we attended our first Florida 2K together in 2018. So we've both been, you know, building up our race programs over the past couple years, and it'd be a fun race. And especially if we could do it here at Bradenton Motorsports Park, because this is where we started.
Have you ever tried any other platforms? Like, do you have any friends that race that were like, oh, hey, like, take my car down the track or something like that to try out, like, you know, what it's like racing a different type of platform?
I haven't really. It's really hard when you get into, like, the GTR, like, DCT community. Like, everyone drives a GTR or a Lambo or an R8. I mean, it's cool to take one of those down the track. Like, you switch up. But I was even talking to Joanne about this. Like, I would do anything to get her in my car. The only other person who has driven my car besides me was Travis Pastrana on Hoonigan.
What?
Yeah, that was cool.
We're going to talk about
this. Okay. But I would love to have, like, Joanna be the second person who does that. Like, I think that she would love it. I like having people have fun with the car, you know, and even before I got here, my car was delivered and I let Hayden Raymond take out.
I saw that.
Yeah. So Hayden.
I saw that. He was just like driving it around.
It was a street car. right? So I was like, Hayden, listen, if you want, take the car. He took it over to Chris at Project Prime, just cleaned it up, drove it around. I mean, that's it's good. Awesome. It's good miles on it. I just want everyone to have fun. Like, I bought the car because I wanted to have fun. I wanted to share it with people. So stuff like that, like, it makes me very happy.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, just, you know, take my race car.
Yeah. He was like, are you serious? I was like, yeah, what? Yeah. What do you mean? He was like, okay. All right, I'll do it. I was like, all right, yeah, go. He's like, take it. Just make sure you don't run out of fuel because that thing chugs fuel.
Oh my gosh. Well, what kind of fuel are you running?
So we do a X85L VP113 like mix. So that's where we are like keeping it's like a race fuel, the 113. We're just keeping the content, you know, above 60. Just, it seems like the engine likes that. So
yeah,
that something nice and safe.
I was
going
to say, if he runs out of fuel, he has to, spare gas jug in the car.
I pre-warned him. I was like, hey man, listen, you're gonna have to order some fuel too, because if you take it out and, you know, you get low, like, you're gonna have to fill it up yourself.
No putting 93 in that.
Right. Yeah. You know, and to be honest, he could have, if in the case of emergency, you could have just put pump E85 in there. Like, it'll run. I just don't want to race on that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're holding out on me. What is this Travis Pastrana story?
Okay. Well, okay. So back in 2021, Hoonigan invited us out to California for the Flying Finish This First That. Okay. We raced Darren Parsons in his Nova, and then we raced Travis Pastrana in his, what do they call it? His Subaru. I forget what the name of the Subaru was. But so the Flying Finish was essentially you race Travis, and then at the 1,000-foot mark, he has to jump his car. And like, it's like the Flying Finish. Whoever finishes first, like, you get the cool picture. And we beat the brakes off him. So, I mean, I felt it was just so cool because, like, Travis Pastrana, like, they say never meet your heroes or something like that. And, like, Travis Pastrana was
everything you expected.
He was the coolest, most down to earth guy. Like, he was telling me about his daughters and how his daughters are getting into motorsports. Like, he was really cool. So, at the end of the race, I was like, all right, man, like, I know I just, you know,
blew the doors off.
Blew your doors off. Like, how about you take my car down? For a little ride. And they didn't put this on Hoonigan. I'm sure they have their reasons, but I'll tell you a funny story. So I was trying to teach him, you know, how to pull the parachute. He didn't have a parachute on his car. It's like, all you do is when you're done, you grab the parachute lever and you just push it in. You'll be fine. And so he went down the track and I taught him how to do that. I must have, when I was repacking the chute, just maybe pulled the bar too much. I'm not really sure.
Too far back.
When I was resetting it, when I was packing the chute. And when he made his pass, he pulled the chute, but it didn't open. It didn't open. So he gets out of the car, and God, I wish I had this on video. It was so funny. He gets out of the car and he walks to the back of the car and he's like, huh, weird. Why didn't it deploy? And he poked it and it deployed right in his face. And so my car punched Travis Pastrana in the face. I felt so bad, but it was the funniest thing ever. I just can't believe that happened. And it just so happened, it was like by like a hair. It was just holding on.
Gosh.
So as soon as he poked it, it just ejected at him.
That is so funny.
But truly, Travis was like grade A guy. Like, he was incredible. It was such a fun time racing him. Hoonigan was awesome. The location was awesome, and it was an awesome experience.
Any other cool experiences like that?
That was probably the coolest, I gotta say. We also did so Hoonigan's Burnyard. We went there. We did a 60-foot race, which was the shortest race I've ever done. Against
this was in your GTR?
Yes, in my GTR. It was a Supra, and I should remember his name. I think his name was Mo, from up New York. I think it's Mo Khan.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So we went to the Burnyard after the This First That episode. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, well, we usually have like drifters back here, like doing donuts and stuff. I was like, well, I hate to break it to you. I can't do donuts back here. Like, I'll give you a burnout or something cool. And they were like, well, how about you just like do a race from this wall to like that storage container over there? And I was like, that's like like maybe a little bit over 60 feet. So like it was essentially a 60 foot race, which was like very short. But that was fun.
The kids in the Power Wheels racing.
I love that.
They're running 60
feet. Yeah.
So
yeah,
yeah.
You can imagine how short that is.
Yeah, of course. It's short for the kids racing. Like I can imagine a Supra and a GTR going 60 feet. Like
we're essentially just, we were just launching and then hitting the brakes. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it was a cool attempt. It was fun for us to like, you know, we did a foot race after that.
Yeah.
We did a race where you had to be in the car. You had to jump out of the car, run down the 60 foot marker, get back in the car, launch the car to the 60 foot and then stop. It was something like that. And it was fun. It was like cool just to like do something different with the car. So, yeah.
Actually, you're based out of DC, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could have came to Fast Life Fest.
Oh, I gotta know.
It was in Cecil County.
I gotta know about these things.
We were promoting, man. We were promoting the hell out of it.
I didn't get any call from Hugo or Brian.
Next time.
Nothing like
next
that.
Next time. I have your number now. All I'll right. personally make sure.
Sounds good.
Hey, Fast Life Fest round 2 is going down.
So is that the kids racing?
That's the kids Power Wheels racing. There was a couple other things there. You know, import and domestic drag racing, car show.
Okay.
But like the kids racing was like the highlight of it. And like those things. Oh, and junior dragsters. But like the kids racing was just, it was nuts. There was like over 100 cars.
You've seen my Power Wheels. No. I have a...
You have a Power Wheels?
I have a pink...
You could have brought it.
Pink baby GTR Power Wheels that we set up. 2 12-volt batteries in series. It does wheelies.
Do you have kids?
I don't. It's for me because I am a kid. But
I was going to say you could have entered the
kids in there. I'm going to have to hire a child racer to come race my Power Wheels.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
That is a thing. There are cars there that these guys like to build, and they'll just bring them and be like, hey, I don't have a kid. I can't race it against the kids, so if someone wants to race it.
You talked about me getting a new race program. Maybe this is my new race program. I'm going to get one of these kids in my mini GTR.
It could be.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Cool. That's hilarious.
Why the R35 over like a 34, 33? And do you have any love or admiration for those style GTRs, or is it just the R35 that...
I know a lot of people like they love like the older generation Skyline GTRs, like, and that's cool. Like, I think it's cool. I've been in Japan, like I've seen them in person, like I've seen them over here when everyone started importing, you know, all the new ones that can come in. But I didn't fall in love with that. Like in high school, like I distinctly remember the GTR coming out and I was like, that is the coolest car. Like I want that car. I love that car. Like I never really was like a fan of anything else. You know, I was a Euro person at first. Like I really liked Volkswagens a lot, like when I very first started. But and then I got the Miata, and then I was Japanese from there on out. So yeah, it's really the R35 GTR. Like that is my thing. That's my car.
Yeah, I was curious because I feel like there's a disconnect between the older ones and the newer ones. Like I don't know what it is. Me personally, in my brain, I know it's a GTR. I know it's the 35, comes right after the 34. But I feel like, I don't know, maybe just because it's here, maybe because it doesn't come in a manual transmission, it feels like a completely different platform.
It does.
But it also kind of doesn't, you know?
It does. You're right. I think it does. And you know what? I think instead of, you know, the Victor and Mac beef being, you know, VR38 versus 2J, it should have been 2J versus RB. Like, I think that is a much better comparison.
Yeah.
Than, you know, the modern day VR38. I'm not saying that it's a better motor. I'm not getting into any of that. But truly, if you wanted to make a better comparison, I think putting the 2J and the RB
right
against each other is a way better, you know, competition.
Which one would you go with?
A 2J. I mean, come on. But, you know, I am really excited. GTR Festival is at the end of this year, November 14th to 17th, I believe, or maybe 15th to 17th. They are importing a ton of fast RBs, and I am excited to see those cars. You know, those are some of the fastest GTRs in the world, and I'm excited to see them. I'm excited to see them racing against, you know, the R32s to Fords racing the 35s. I think that's going to be a really cool dynamic. Again, I said I love the diversity, so I'm excited for that. Like, I would love to line up next to something like a fast, you know, 32 to 34.
What do you think about doing like an RB swap in a 35?
I
think it's like an improvement. You think it's a downgrade?
Anything else into an R35, like, shell is so dumb because the car's so heavy. Like, I would put it, like, if you have a nice motor, put in something light. You know what I mean? Like, something that you can go quick with. I know there's going to be plenty of truck people that are like, oh, well, my truck's, you know, I have a truck and it's heavy. And I just, I don't know. Like, if it were up to me, like, I would love, like I said, I would love to put a VR38 in a Miata. Like, how freaking cool is that? How cool would that be?
That'd be kind of scary.
Terrifying.
I think anything high horsepower in a Miata is horrifying.
Terrifying. You absolutely saw horrifying. Matt Lanphier's, what is it? I think it's like
V8 swap.
It's an LSX or LS7, something. It's something
I don't
ridiculous.
Remember. We've done an interview with him before, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, yo, what's in this thing? It's like, all I know is the V8 powered,
yeah,
and the thing is stupid fast.
Insane.
And stupid scary.
So I've known him and that car since I was like in high school. Like, he bought that thing, and it was like a trash pile, just like my GTR was like a trash pile. And he built it into a show car. Like, he had these like beautiful like ITBs on the car, and it was like a show car. And then he turned it into this insane drag car, and like, you know what? That's kind of motivational to me, you know? Yeah. Like, 'cause I feel like I kind of did something similar coming from the Miata to the Evo to the GTR, then racing the GTR. So,
and his car still looks good.
Oh my God, it's beautiful. It looks really good. Yeah. I love that car. It's awesome. And Jace Miklos, who works with him, you know, I've known all of them. Miata community, really small. I've loved watching them. So I get really inspired when I see that Miata. I'm out. I'm like, I want to do something. I don't even think a VR38 would fit in the Miata. So
I'm sure.
It would have to be like
something. Somebody can make something work.
Oh God, it would look so weird. But yeah, I'm sure they'd make it work, but it would sure be ugly.
I actually want to highlight on that. So you said your car wasn't in the best condition when you got it. How did you get it?
So the car, I think I'm like the fourth owner of the car. You know, it didn't have high miles, but like there were like mods on the car that like I didn't love. Like someone just took like, it wasn't spray paint, but it was like spray tint, and they like spray tinted the headlights, spray tinted the taillights. They color matched all of like the black accents on the car white, the same color as the car was. Car's white. And it just looked not good. Like, and the wheels were white with like a black,
it's
like rim.
All white everything?
Yeah. And it just was like blacked out like taillights and stuff. It just looked so yucky to me. But like, I didn't care because I knew I was going to make it my own. I wanted something that I could buy and still have money to make the car my own. And that's what I did. You know, as soon as I brought it home, like I said, I brought it to Baker Performance, did everything. He had so many parts. You know, he was in drag racing well before I even bought the GTR. So he taught me a lot, and we put the car together, and now it's not a pile of junk.
I was going to say, so what made you pick that particular GTR? Was it just like cheaper than all the other ones?
It was cheap. It had low miles. I mean, it was ugly, but again, like I knew I was going to fix it myself. And it was just, I think it was the right timing. It just felt right, you know? And as sad as I was to sell the Evo, because I love that thing, it was the time.
Would you ever get another one?
Evo?
Yeah.
Yo, yeah.
Is it?
I've really considered it.
That might be the secret class she's talking
about. Absolutely not. I will never race an Evo. I'm sorry. I love them to death, but I'm never racing an Evo.
I like them. I totally want one. It's on my bucket list of cars to get.
They're fun. They're a lot of fun.
One day. Yeah. Joanna also has an Evo.
She does. You know, and that's another funny thing is there's like a big rivalry between like the Evo 8 and 9 and like the Evo 10. Like people are like, oh, the Evo 10 is not a real Evo. Like,
oh, yeah. I remember that.
I don't understand that. But, you know, because I love all of them. I think they're all really nice. Even the ones that people are importing now. I think the whole line is awesome, so.
I'm a huge fan of, like, the 5 and 6 mm-hmm. era. Those are really cool.
Yeah.
A buddy of ours, Colt, from Shop JDM and JDM Supreme up in Connecticut. You might know him. He has a Tommy McKinnon or Tommy Mackinnon red one. Full liveried out, and like he drives that thing in New York City and all over the place. You'll see it at some events and stuff.
I wonder.
Like
I don't think I know him. I'm surprised I haven't seen the car because I used to, like I said, I used to drive my car up and down all the time.
Later.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That era is like my favorite. Another friend of mine had a blue one, same edition, also with the liveries on it, and
that's sick.
It looks sick. I've always wanted one.
If you had to import any car, but you could only pick one car from Japan, what car would it be?
I really want an R33.
Really? Why the 33?
I feel like there's too much hype on the 34. Kind of plays it out. You know, blue R34, Fast and Furious, everybody wants one. Yeah. Or like the silver one.
Right.
The 32, and I've spoken to a couple GTR experts, and I've been told that like the 32 is the way to go for like learning to drive them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to R33, because apparently like all the tech or whatever they did to the R33 makes it a lot easier to drive, I think. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm like, I also just really like how they look. Like, it's newer than the 32. It's like a happy medium.
Interesting. You know? Okay.
I'd get a 33.
Nice.
Which we don't have to import them. We could probably find one.
Right now. Yeah. They were here well before.
They're probably on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, like, right now. I could probably pull up a bunch of them. Yeah. Cool. Nice.
What would you import?
AutoZam AZ1.
Hell yeah.
I want one of those so freaking bad. I want one so bad. I wish you could put anything in it. Like, I wish you could put like a different, I mean, you have no space, but I wish you could put like some sort of cool, maybe like a Busa motor in there.
I was
like,
gonna say, you could probably fit something like
and
that.
And it'd be sick.
That'd be so fast.
God, I would love that. I think they're like the cutest cars ever.
You'll see them driving around New York. It's really, really funny.
They're like, so cool. Like, they are one of the coolest cars I've ever seen. I love little mini cars. I told you I like the Cappuccino, I like the Miata. I like the easy one.
Cars are fun. All right, I think we're going to wrap up the podcast here. If you guys like this episode, make sure to like, share, comment, and subscribe. Brooke, how can they find you on social media?
At Brooke Barini on all social media.
Awesome. At Nav Lifestyle Media or at Nick_P with like 12 more underscores, because I literally just went through until like there was enough that it wasn't taken. Thank you guys for watching. We'll see you in the next one.
Thanks.